back, gang, to another episode of The Starting Block. I'm Swain, the host of the show, and my guest today is Mia Araujo, or Araujo, I think is closer to the proper pronunciation, but that's just me showing off and doing a poor job of it. Mia is a fantasy artist and illustrator. She is based out of Los Angeles. Her work has appeared in galleries around the country and around the world. And her work as an illustrator can be seen in the pages of High Fructose Magazine, Imagine Effects, Society of Illustrators LA, The Creative Quarterly, Suggestivism, and others. In our conversation, Mia talks about the LA art scene, how she and her twin sister both drew as little kids, pushing for more diversity within the fantasy genre, and her own Artists of Color interview series, which is amazing. Mia's also working on a fully illustrated novel that is a retelling of the classic tale Alice in Wonderland. You can find out more about the project on her site as well as support it via her Patreon page. And we'll put links to all of that on Muddy Colors. And here is my conversation with Mia Araujo. Well, Mia, you're born and raised in Los Angeles. And I've got some other friends in L.A., and I have some friends in the Bay Area. And I know the Bay Area has a really active creative community there as far as, like, fine art and entertainment art and video games and comics and all that kind of stuff. But as a city, how has L.A. Been for you in terms of, you know, you're a fantasy artist and an illustrator. How has it been for you in terms of finding your tribe and people who have, you know, a like sensibility to you and the things that you like to make?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really think of it in any particular way because it's what I'm used to, but I live in Orange County now. I've lived here for about 6 years. So I do notice, like, it's a little more conservative out here, and so it makes me realize actually how liberal LA really is and stuff. And so that's, like, the main difference that I've noticed about growing up there. Mm-hmm. And same with, like, people say that LA is very superficial, like, everybody is just really cares about their looks and stuff like that. But I guess, again, since I grew up there, I didn't really notice that was, you know, odd in any way. But in terms of the art stuff, it was really easy to find, I think, people who made art like that I was interested in, or that made art similar to what I was making in terms of the gallery world. When I was showing in galleries, like, right out of school, there was literally a handful of gallery shows happening every single weekend, and that kind of became my social life. So I would go out to gallery shows and meet artists, and I was super shy, but I mean, I was able to connect with a bunch of artists in that way. And I think that's a lot harder in Orange County. Like, there isn't that scene, I guess, like that whole gallery scene that I got really used to. So I do miss that.
Mm. And there's I know there's a ton of entertainment art opportunities there in Los Angeles. And you've done some print stuff for as far as illustration, and then you just mentioned the gallery work as well. Have you dabbled in any of that in terms of, like, video games or concept work or even, like, development stuff or maybe even for animation?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, I grew up definitely wanting to be a Disney animator, like a lot of people from my generation, like from the late 80s. But when I went to art school, I just realized actually I loved the storytelling and stuff, but I wouldn't want to necessarily do the, like, animation itself. And I thought for a while I wanted to be a concept artist as well, but then realized I don't know. It's interesting. It's like, I like creating my own worlds, but I don't know if I'd want to create them for other people or for other stories. So I just quickly just decided, just like, all the, you know, I'm interested in all, you know, film and video games and all this kind of and animation, but I wouldn't want to make them, and realized that I have my own ideas that I want to do. So just kind of pursued the independent path. But yeah, all those opportunities are definitely there. And most of my friends work in the either video game industry or concept art or any of that kind of stuff. And it's really cool to meet these artists, like, at the animation expo and stuff like that, like different conventions and things like that. Like, yeah, you're right. All the conventions in LA or San Diego or OC are definitely very entertainment based.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you attended art school and you graduated from Otis over in Westchester. What was your life like before that, like growing up as a kid, and how did art end up making its presence known to you and for you as a youngster?
I have that cliched story of, like, the kid that just picked up a pencil and never stopped, and I actually have a twin sister, so the two of us would draw all the time and, like, coloring books and stuff. Like, yeah, I remember that being one of my earliest memories, just drawing with her and stuff. For me, I never wanted to do anything else, but just watching, you know, cartoons and animation made me, I think at some point I started being aware that people are making this art and making a living doing that. And that was very exciting to me. So I think just, yeah, over time, I've always wanted to do art in some way. I just wasn't quite sure what career I wanted to do. So up until high school, my sister and I were kind of some of the only artists in our class. So mm-hmm. we didn't really have artist friends. It would just be people who, you know, liked watching us draw, like that kind of thing. So being in art school was definitely a, oh my gosh, this is my tribe. But all of a sudden it's like, there's 1,000 other artists and you're not the only one kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was really cool, but also really intimidating. So most of my art education started in college, but during high school, I was actually really lucky to take a summer art program at Art Center in Pasadena. And I was 14 or 15 years old, and Donovan Howard was my first life drawing teacher. I'll never forget his name and how he drew. He worked at DreamWorks at the time, and I was just like, that's where my love for life drawing just came. It was born in my teens, so...
I love your sketches, and I love your life drawing pieces that you post online. Is your sister still pursuing art either as an occupation or as a hobbyist? Or
yeah, she stopped for a few years when we were in middle school, high school, I think. But mm-hmm. when we had to choose our college, she actually wanted to go to the same school as me. So she was like, "Oh, I guess I'm gonna have to do some art thing." And she wasn't really sure what she wanted to pursue. But she just chose the fashion, fashion design. And turns out she's always been really interested in clothing, but like and more so in the way that she could never find clothes she liked. So she's like, I'll just design my own stuff. So she pursued fashion, and she was a designer, a head designer for a number of years. And she actually just quit her job this year and is traveling the world now and pursuing like fashion illustration. So she still draws and stuff like that. She was doing design for a while. But yeah, she's really great at drawing and is looking to do that professionally now. So
good for her. That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah.
you have a minor in creative writing as far as your education goes. When you're working on pieces like the Cosmic Mermaid or Queen of Hearts or something like that, are you more focused on it as a single image or are you creating like an imaginary backstory for the piece in your mind, like almost like an actor would?
Yeah, I think that just from my earliest years, I always was interested in storytelling and the writing aspect of it. Like I loved reading as a kid, so that definitely, and I still mm-hmm. love reading. So I think that there is definitely a narrative element to my work, whether I share that or not. So on standalone pieces like the Cosmic Mermaid piece or the Brujas piece, I do think of them as singular images, but I like to, just for myself, know a little bit more, at least about the world or about the character or what I'm trying to do, like narratively with the piece. And then the Queen of Hearts is actually part of the whole Alice in Wonderland retelling I'm doing right now. So that is my first, I think this project is my first time really having pieces that sort of relate to each other in a narrative and in something that I am writing. So writing is going to be a major component for it. But yeah.
Now I have to ask you, because I saw the Alice in Wonderland piece, and I didn't know if you were simply taking the title from, you know, the old fairy tale, or if this was a part of a larger project. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, I started working on this idea, and it was based on a senior project I was doing in college. I took an African art class, and I immediately was blown away by the imagery and the costumes and the people. And I've always loved fantasy, but personally, I just feel like it's a bit too like Eurocentric. Like all the major high fantasy worlds are based in some kind of European world.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that class, I was just blown away just by the possibilities of creating different fantasy worlds just from different cultures and stuff like that. And I think a lot of that stemmed too from just like Disney movies kind of feeling like grown up, like they were all sort of from different parts of the world. At least it felt like that when I was growing up. I knew I wanted to do something, but I wasn't sure. So in college, I just kind of did a sort of North African Alice in Wonderland inspired kind of story, but it wasn't Alice. And then just a few years ago, like my boyfriend was looking at that project and saying, you should really, you know, revisit that. Like, I think that was a really cool idea. And I had taken a 10-year break from writing, actually. It was a really bad writing class I had in college with an instructor that was getting a little too personal. And it was a real turn off for me. And I just kind of, yeah, I got away from the writing for all that time and just was focusing on art only. And just my boyfriend kind of saying, you should really like look at that project again. I was like, that might be a good way to get back into writing, to basically adapt a story that already has structure and stuff, and I can just interpret it myself. And yeah, I think I was just getting really bored again with just the fantasy genre, just feeling just very, like, everything's just feels very overdone and just like it's been done. And so mm-hmm. I just started working on this in earnest, and the project has been through a few iterations visually, and I've been leveling up in my skills in the past years and stuff, and I feel like I'm finally now in a place where I've reinterpreted all the characters. It's going to be a sister story based in, like, the western part of the African continent, and it's a fantasy world, so it's, I want it to feel like something that could have existed or people that could have existed, but sorry, I feel like I'm talking very long, so feel free to edit any of this out, by the way.
No. All of this is great. I had no idea. You know, I mean, again, we were talking before we started recording, and we're talking about some of the pieces at the top of your the page as far as your paintings are concerned. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Isis and Queen of Hearts and, mm-hmm. and Brujas and all of those, you know, I love them all, and especially Cosmic Mermaid, I think, is my favorite. But
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, but when I saw Alice in Wonderland, I said, "Well, I wonder if she's trying to do something with this." So I think that's awesome.
Okay, cool.
You know, to try to reimagine it and to maybe even, you know, use the dreaded R word, reboot it mm-hmm. for a yeah. for a new generation featuring, you know, black and brown faces. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's honestly that was part of the inspiration too, because I feel like I love Alice in Wonderland. It's one of my favorite stories. It's so, like, mm-hmm. the writing is so genius, and I feel like everybody who tries to remake it, like, has a very narrow spectrum of how they reinterpret the story. She's always blonde, she's always blue-eyed, she's always wearing a blue dress. I know a lot of it comes from the Disney version from the 50s, but I'm like, there's so many ways you can see this story. And so, I don't know, I was just really excited about, if I'm going to reinterpret one of my favorite stories, I want to do it in a way that I've never seen before, but a way that I want to see it. So,
Yeah,
and it's been really fun to reinterpret all the characters and do my own thing with it, so.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. And that was actually part a question I was going to ask you later, but I was going to ask if it was important to you to have a plethora of different kinds of faces and body types and ethnicities in your own work. But I think you kind of answered it just now. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's something that I'm super passionate about. I've been talking to a few other artists about this. Like, so I've been having some conversations about this, and at conventions too. It's something that people come up to me and talk to me about. But I just feel like, again, to go back to this idea of fantasy, it's an imaginative genre. I think that's what's drawn me and so many fans of it to it. The idea that you can come up with possibilities of new worlds and stuff. But it's this one fan came up to me and he said this, and I just won't forget it. But he says, it's like, I think it's so interesting that a lot of fantasy, like, authors and stuff will create new races, but the human races we see tend to all be white. And that's just something that just blows my mind. It's just, there's so much you can do with fantasy, but it's like with people that you actually see every day. And it's just, yeah. Anyway, yeah. I just want to see, with all the work I do, just create worlds that I want to see more of. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I mentioned to you earlier, but again, before we started recording, that I'd gone to Dragon Con with my daughter, and we ran into my friend Eric Wilkerson, who's a terrific illustrator himself.
Oh yeah.
And he was set.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
yeah. Great. He was set up there, and he had posted an image of a young lady who walked by his table, and she said, "Anything sci-fi fantasy that features people of color, I'm down." And she bought something, and he was so happy that she said that. So that's terrific. And that actually brings me to my last question, or the last area I wanted to kind of get into with you is the Artists of Color series that you do on your website. I think I have an idea as to why you started the Artists of Color interview series, but for those who are unfamiliar with it, tell us what the inspiration was, and I guess it's partially what you just mentioned here, and maybe what your end goal with it was, if there even was one.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the subject of representation is super important to me, but I feel like it is something that gets really politicized a lot, and mm-hmm. I have some conservative friends that don't get it. Like, they don't get why it's so important for people to see themselves in fantasy. They go, it's just a movie, you know, it's just, you know, made up characters. And I think it can feel that way. It's just this when you are represented or when you see yourself, and it's just a given. But for, as a woman who's kind of had to see a lot of female characters just be stereotyped and stuff, I can only imagine what it would be like to be brown or black and see all these, like, super pale, you know, heroes and stuff. And so I think for me, representation is super important, but I want to depoliticize it. So I just want to have conversations and just show people that it's not that scary of a subject. Like people who are afraid to kind of get into this kind of topic, basically. And the other part of it is that I feel like that feminist quote, if she can see it, she can be it, really applies to anyone of a minority background, whether it's non-binary or, you know, LGBT or people of color. I just feel like, and I've had some artists actually say, I feel like I don't see that many people of color artists that are doing the kind of art I want to do. And so that's what I wanted to do, just compile this amazing like blog series of just art that you just scroll through and look at all this incredible art and read all these amazing stories. And they're all people of color, so that hopefully at some point the gatekeepers won't have the excuse of those artists just aren't out there. I can't hire them because I can't find them. And also just for young artists that maybe are interested in art, but they don't see anyone like them doing it. So they don't see it as a viable, maybe career option, for them to look up to and see amazing artists doing the kind of work that they want to do.
Yeah. One of the things I love about the series is, and you have great taste in art, in terms of the stuff that you feature. And then certainly the fact that these are all people of color is a whole other, benefit. But, I love the fact that you're not just talking to artists who are working today. You're actually featuring some artists that have passed on, have gone, but maybe we didn't know were people of color, like, Henry Osawa Tanner. You featured his work, and he's deceased, but he has a piece called The Banjo Lesson. My mother has that picture hanging up in her house.
Oh, wow.
And I had no idea that he was a person of color, that he was a black artist.
That's amazing.
So, and when I saw it, I was like, oh my goodness, you know, and then, you know, there are others on there. Francis Vallejo is actually a friend, well. And there was a young lady. Anyway, you've got great taste in artists. And I think it's just tremendous that, that you are trying to pull all of this together in one place for people to find, because, you know, as like you said, as much as the conversation of diversity has gotten politicized and can be kind of a hot button topic, it really is important to have a variety of voices and a variety of presentations as far as art is concerned. And not that all women are going to be a monolith, or that all people of color are going to be a monolith, or that everyone in the LGBTQ community are going to be a monolith. But certainly, you know, there's going to be some shared sensibilities, and there's going to be some overlap. And I think the Artists of Color series is definitely doing a lot of heavy lifting as far as just making sure that those voices are out there. So I love it.
Thank you. That means a lot. And I mean, I'm just glad to give these artists a platform to talk to you about all this stuff, because I do feel like a lot of white allies tend to want to say stuff, you know, or like have these conversations. But to me, it's really important to give artists of color that voice, or people of color that voice, and just have them. And for the most part, what I've learned too, that it's just one of the questions I ask is, I feel like people who don't have that certain background or have that, or are that of that particular gender should represent people that don't look like them. But how do they do that? Some people are afraid of doing that. Mm-hmm. And so they just don't. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like fear isn't the way to do it. If you're interested and you're passionate about it, there is a way to do it. But for the most part, the answer has been just talk to people or research. And it's just, it's not that hard. It's not that hard to do it if you're passionate about it. So it's just been really cool to hear everybody's, you know, answers and to read their stories. I've been enjoying it just as somebody just putting it together. And I'm glad other people are getting something out of it too.